Welcome to the Radio Facts Radio Show. This is Kevin Ross with another edition of the show, and today we have another interesting subject. We want to talk to you about a new genre of music, or at least a relatively new genre of music. So I thought. It's called EDM. EDM is huge right now. DJs are making millions in Vegas, more than some celebrities to party. We can't deny that we're flying high. And they're getting bookings all over the world. But one thing I've noticed about EDM, sharing our love like angels that fly, you don't see a lot of black DJs involved in it. And today we're going to find out why. Kissing your lips so tempting and sweet. We're going to talk to Jay Salter, who's an anomaly, a black DJ with an EDM hit. When I'm in your arms, I feel complete. You know, the more I listen to this song, I actually start to like it. I don't like EDM music, but this one's not that bad. There's probably about 500 mixes that Jay Salter did. He's here today with Jackie McGee. You remember her from Make It Last Forever fame. Probably one of my favorite R&B songs of all time. That is definitely Jackie's song. All day long, with all due respect for Keith, that's Jackie's song. All right, here we go. Enjoy. You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station. Okay, Jay, so tell me about how you came up with the concept to get involved in EDM.
Okay, well, I was involved with dance music, any type of party music, you know, from many years ago, mm-hmm. as a DJ, as a producer, and stuff like that, because, you know, I liked it. I was a dancer. I liked to dance a lot, and one of the things about EDM and dance music is it's very energetic, and there's different degrees of it, of course, but it's fun music, you know, overall. I mean, there are some that still have its extremes and everything, but overall, it's fun music, and, you know, I just gravitated towards it because of the energy it brought and things like that, so I just enjoy it, you know.
So what is your history? You were a DJ at one time, like a club DJ that did urban music at one time, and then you kind of progressed to EDM?
Well, when I first started DJing, and I still do DJ, by the way, but when I first started DJing years ago, you know, I played hip-hop, I played R&B, I played dance music and house and stuff like that. So those were my four main genres of go-to music that I would normally play for, what I would be called to play for. And sometimes it was regular parties or private. Sometimes it was the nightclubs. Sometimes it was bars. But it was like literally like all over, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then now EDM is not something you generally see a lot of black DJs involved in. Why is that?
You know, a lot of black, quote unquote, black DJs are really come from a different era of music, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us, and I'm saying us because I'm, you know, I'm African-American too, you know, we were there when we were the creators and innovators of hip-hop and R&B and so on and so forth. So there are certain things that, you know, we stick with and that we're very comfortable with and we pioneered. Dance music has primarily been a type of music where it was done by other races. Mm-hmm. And as EDM developed into the umbrella as it is, it's really pretty much dominated by, you know, the producers and DJs from in Europe and Australia, the UK, for example. They pretty much dominated it. But what took place was that the reason why it kind of seems like it's a little bit of a far reach for black people, per se, or black DJs, is because it came from there, but at the same time, it crossed over into pop music as well. So once the major labels got involved with that and they were calling those guys too and girls to do remixes because they were to do remixes and everything, that's when it really translated very well over here in the United States. Now, don't get me wrong, we've been doing dance music over here for many years. There's a lot of black house DJs and house producers and stuff like that over here. Yeah. But when you use the umbrella EDM, it's generally looked at as, you know, white dance music in a sense. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the difference in everything.
Okay. Now, when you got involved, since we don't see a lot of black DJs involved with EDM, was there any resistance, or were you immediately accepted, or how did that work?
That's a good question. Even to this day, sometimes they look at me and say, oh, do you know our stuff?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And that's fine, because that's the way I get to surprise them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The thing about it is I do things a little bit different than the typical dance or EDM DJ would, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm rhythmically charged myself.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I like to incorporate a lot of different types of rhythms, like urban rhythms. It could be funk, it could be tribal, it could be, you know, a lot of the different types of things that really make you dance. And sometimes I can even incorporate some Latin in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when I combine some of that with the typical EDM music, people are like, wow, that's like really different. Like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
And it really translates very well over the dance floor. They look at me like, who's this guy doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I was able to be accepted as a quote-unquote EDM DJ, because I can do their stuff, but at the same time, I can incorporate something new for the listeners and the people on the dance floor.
Okay. Now, you currently you're having great success with your single, Angel of Mine, and I remember Jackie McGee's name, but I don't remember the other girl's name. What was it?
Oh, Dominique.
Dominique, okay. Now, in all fairness, we want to make sure that everybody knows that was Dominique singing on the intro before the show. Jackie, we have you on the phone as well. Congratulations on pairing up with Jay and enjoying another about or round of success in the music industry. I have a couple of questions for you. You've been in the industry for about, what, maybe 25 years?
A little more than that.
A little more than that. Okay. You've been recording for about 25 years.
About 20, how old is Make It Last Forever? About 27 years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it is about 27 years. Yeah. You know what? I was telling Jay the first time I talked to him that Make It Last Forever is, with all due respect to Keith, that is your song.
That's
right.
Thank you.
I'm willing to bet you've been told that before.
No, I've heard that a whole lot over 27 years.
It is. It is. And it's like, because I remember we were playing, that was around the time I first started in radio, and everybody was asking, who is that girl singing? So you definitely added, I mean, a just an amazing element to that song that really took it to a whole new level. And I was rather disappointed that you're, when you signed with MCA, you were with, right?
Yeah, MCA Universal, yeah.
And then you had, wasn't your first single, like, was it Skeezer?
Skeezer. Ooh, don't talk about Skeezer. They made me do that. They made me do that.
Yeah, so... So what was the, I mean, with somebody who had such potential back then, the way the industry worked versus today, what is your opinion? Do you think that you would have had a better chance today versus back then?
You know what? The industry is crazy. It's still crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, you know, who's in charge at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with a lot of artists, we get stuck in that whole politic thing with the record labels. And,
right.
You know, sometimes you have people that think they know, and then there's some people that don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the money would be there, but, you know, the creativity wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And Puffy actually wanted to work with me
mm-hmm.
when they signed me, because he really had a bigger vision for what I could do.
Right.
And, you know, because I was signed by Al Teller, who was the president of the label, you know, the white guy.
Yeah.
And
yes. Mm-hmm.
he didn't really want to let anybody come in and really take over and work on my project, you know. The way it should have been taken care of. The reason why I did Skeezer at all was because I also did, I had a hit record with Salt and Pepper. I did Expressions with Salt and Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big, you know, rap / R&B record that, you know, using an R&B singer, it was like the first group that had an R&B singer and it hit, you know. it hit big, and it, you know, ended up being platinum single, and then went double platinum. So, you know, a lot of people don't know that I did Expressions with Salt-N-Pepa.
Was that Express Yourself or Expressions?
Yeah, it's called Expressions, but it's Express Yourself.
Oh, okay, that's odd. Okay, well,
it's called Expressions, but you know the hook is Express Yourself.
Right. I was like, Expressions? I don't remember that. What is that?
That's right. Nobody knows about Expressions, but Express Yourself, yeah.
Okay. I didn't know you did that either. I didn't know that was you.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I ended up doing Skeezer, because Herbie and I worked together, Herbie Lovebug and I worked together doing Expressions, and he ended up producing Skeezer on my record. And they thought that that would be a good single to release. I didn't, but, you know, because people wanted to hear the ballad R&B Jackie. They didn't want to hear... they didn't want to see that part. That's like, that wasn't me.
Right.
So, and I'm not going to say it wasn't me that I wouldn't have been able to pull it off. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think that that was the first thing to put out to pull off.
Right. So, you know, you're absolutely right. Cause I remember back in those days when the industry was, basically controlled by A&R people who absolutely knew nothing about Black culture. And, because radio was the same way. It's like, you know, I worked in radio, and, you know, the interns basically were the program directors, but nobody knew that. So they went to the interns to get advice on Black culture, and they were making $5 an hour. And then the people who were making $150,000 were getting, you know, free advice, you know, to keep doing their job. So it was kind of the same concept. We have very little control back then. And that's why I was asking you at this point, where you can, you know, produce stuff online, you're still very active, you can switch up and you can do EDM. Do you feel that you have more control at this point, or is it more difficult? Is it easier, or what?
I mean, the only thing that I see that's different, because I've been out of the loop for a while.
Okay.
So when I linked up with Jay Salter, which I call him Salt. Mm-hmm. So I was about to say Salt, but everybody don't know I call him Salt. Mm-hmm. But when I hooked up with Jay, I hadn't been really doing anything. And when he asked me to do this, at first I was like a little hesitant about doing it, because I was like, you know, the girl Dominique did it, and I didn't want to overpower her. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I see it now as people do have a chance now, better than they had before, to get their stuff out and heard, you know. And I love everything that Jay, I'm trying not to call him Salt, that Jay is doing, you know, by putting out the house tracks and whatever else he's doing, even R&B, rock, whatever he's going to do. Because he's taking steps that a lot of people are scared to take, and on top of it, are scared to put their money into. But really, to me, you have a better chance now, because you can be creative and do what you want and let the people judge for themselves.
Right.
Instead of you having the record label, which is telling you, okay, you have to do X, Y, and Z, and if we don't put it out this way, it's not going to work, which it doesn't matter. They can have, and I did a big deal when I did my deal, and you can have all the money in the world, but at the end of the day, if you don't have those people, creative people in place to make it pop, it's not going to work.
Right.
So I feel like I have a better chance now than I had back then. So, you know, I always say, I don't know what nobody believe in, but the God that I serve, I know that he knows when it's the right time to do whatever, you know, whatever it is for your life. So I think now is a better time, and it doesn't matter how old you are and whatever. If you still have your gift, you use it. And I think people will still be receptive to anything you put, especially they don't even have to know who it was singing. Your voice or whatever that you have that's popping, it's going to shine anyway. You know what I'm saying? So I think now is the better time than really back then.
It's very interesting you should say that, because I was thinking the other day about Susan Boyle, and how if she had walked into a label 20 years ago, they would have thought she was a cleaning lady.
Right.
She would have never, ever, ever gotten it. She could have sang and sounded great and everything else. That and the powers that be would have said, we cannot market you. You're not going to make it. I do like the fact, and I have to emphasize what you said, that today it doesn't matter how old you are. You actually do have access to, you know, a greater amount of people with or without a label, with or without the middleman. And like you said, if you still have your gift, you can do it, and you can even progress. I think that's the key, is that you have to want to move past yesterday. What I've noticed about a lot of people over 35 in the industry, they cannot move. I mean, it is literally like you're asking them to set themselves on fire, to move past yesterday.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you can't be, I didn't mean to cut you off, but, and I'm glad you said that, because you cannot be stuck back in what you used to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Your clothes can't be stuck, your hair can't be stuck, and your music can't be stuck. You can't be stuck. Mm-hmm. You have to roll with whatever is popping at the time. Mm-hmm. And if whatever's popping right now, You got to jump on the wagon. If you don't jump on the wagon, you miss out.
Right. You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station. Let me ask both of you a question. How do you feel about people who say that today's music industry, in order to produce music today, doesn't require a lot of skill? Like you don't, like Jackie, you don't have to be able to sing. Or Jay, you don't really have to be a DJ. You just get your mother to go to the store, if you live in the suburbs, to buy, you know, some DJ equipment, and then everything is done for you.
Oh, man.
We'll let Salt answer that one first.
When I first learned how to DJ, I was using Technics 1200s, which is, you know, vinyl, okay? Mm-hmm. Two turntables, a mixer, microphone, your amp speakers and everything, you know, it was a very hands-on experience.
Right.
I still do that from time to time, depending on the venue or if it calls for it. Mm-hmm. You know, but nowadays it's 99% computer, electronics, or it's CDJs or whatever it be. It's all electronic in some type of way. So for the kid or the new guy or girl who's just jumping into DJing now, and They try to figure out if this is going to be easy for them or not. Some of these guys are saying, yeah, it's easy. All you got to do is let the computer, you put one song here, you put another song here, and then you just link them up together and it's fine. But there's a problem with that, because if that's the case, then why are the best DJs in the world and everywhere being sought after because of their particular style? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not about what the robot plays, not about what the autoplay says. It's about how does this DJ, this producer, whoever you are, differentiate from the next guy. It's all about their style of play, their choice of music, how they play it. You know, it's a very hands-on experience, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the proof of the pudding is, take that same person who's in their bedroom and let them experiment and use the computer and do everything they're doing, and it sounds good to them. Take that person out of their comfort zone and put them in a big nightclub with 1,000 people in it, and try that. It's not going to work.
But there are some black DJs who say that's what the major DJs who make millions of dollars, that's basically what they're doing.
They're really not doing that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that too. All right. Now, I'm not going to talk about anybody, any DJs in particular.
Right.
All right. But there are some well-known DJs in EDM, okay, that do that. Mm-hmm. All right. They may pre-record their mix, all right, and they'll get them on stage or at a club or whatever it is, and they're acting like they're DJing, but it's really the track that's already pre-mixed, and they're just acting it out.
Oh, wow. You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Some of them are actually doing that, and they're saying they're calling themselves DJs. There's a reason why some of them do that, And I personally, I really don't think they should do that. It should all be a completely live experience, because that's what I do. You know, every event I do or party or whatever it may be, you know, I take it from a perspective of I'm going in and I'm going to see my crowd. I'm going to feel them out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to create this whole night from scratch.
Okay.
And at the end of the night, everybody's going to walk home with broken heels on their feet, you know, feet hurting, stomping, sweating. Crazy, half drunk. It's all about having a good time. Mm-hmm. Okay. But to go further into answering that question is, I can understand why a lot of black DJs would ask that question or even say that, because a lot of them, like I said before, they're coming from a perspective of it's two turntables on the mic, mm-hmm. or it's their Serato, or it's their CDJs. They're very hands on, and they're not relying as much on the computer. So when they see this guy or girl, and they're saying, oh, man, all they do is use the computer, I get it, mm-hmm. because that's what it looks like to them. Mm-hmm. But being that I'm on this side of the fence as well, I got to honestly tell everybody, it's not that easy.
Okay.
Because just because we're playing, let's say, a dance track, let's say at 128 BPM or 130, for example, or even 125, whatever it may be, we still have to match the music. But now we're not, in general, matching the actual records as if we were doing, let's say, hip-hop or R&B. We're not mixing that way. Now we're mixing harmonically. Mm-hmm. We're mixing by tonal experience as well, okay? So it's a different style of mixing that we're doing as opposed to hip-hop DJs, for example, okay? So, and then to summarize that, If a traditional EDM DJ were to try to do a hip hop party as we know how it would be, mm-hmm. it would be very difficult for them because they don't mix that way. Mm-hmm. In the same way for a typical urban DJ, if they were to play and go into a straight up EDM party, I would say it would probably be a little bit easier for them because we understand that how to do things rhythmically as in general from mm-hmm. our backgrounds. Mm-hmm. But then it's about, I don't know what they like. I don't know what songs they like. I don't understand certain things, you know. So it's just really two different styles of mixing.
Well, I can learn really quick if you give me $5 million.
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, if you gave me $5 million, I'll show you some things too, you know.
Yeah, I could learn really quick what they like. Okay, so Jackie, on your end, how do you feel about today's singers? And having, you know, real talent.
You know what? I don't knock nobody's hustle. I put it that way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we all came from an era that we had to work harder. Mm-hmm. You know, we were in the clubs doing shows, because I started out with Teddy Riley at 19. We had a band, mm-hmm. and nobody knew either one of us. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, a year later, Teddy created New Jack Swing. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, and I learned a lot from being on the road. I would go out, you know, on the road with M. Toomey and watch Tawatha sing her head off. I would go out with Atlantic Star and watch them, you know, perform, because my brother-in-law played for them. So I got to go out and see, you know, all these people, including New Edition or whatever, not knowing that me and BBD and all of us would have the same manager, end up with the same manager, Hiram Hicks, and, you know, we would be working together out of the same umbrella and whatever. But like I said, I watched and I came up in an era of hard workers. And even before us, you know, the Phyllis Hymans and the Stephanies and Patty and all of them, they worked hard. Hmm. But today, I don't think they work as hard as we did, mm-hmm. or have to, but time changes, mm-hmm. you know, and things become easier and easier because we have more and more technology. So I can't be mad at what they're doing, if you know, because a lot of them do, you know, they use auto-tuning on their voices or whatever. But like how Salt said, you give them two turntables and a mic, mm-hmm. like give a singer a microphone and put them in a room of, you know, 1,000 people or whatever. See mm-hmm. what they do. And that's the thing. Can you move an audience? Mm-hmm. Can you do, you know, and they don't do like I do artist development. So I work with artists, new artists coming out now. Mm-hmm. The artists that I'm working with are actually, you know, white girls. Mm-hmm. It's an Italian girl I'm working on right now. She's bad. Mm-hmm. She's a beast. And the crazy thing about it is they study people like Kim Burrell and, you know, whoever from the gospel world. Mm-hmm. And they learn their riffs. Mm-hmm. Not saying they have so much soul, but they learn them riffs. Mm-hmm. And they take it and they use it. I am not mad at them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'm like, I'm not no hater. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I say, you know, I'm like, I'm down with whatever, mm-hmm. as long as you are able to pull it off live.
Right, right.
And I think that they are missing out. The one thing I do think that they're missing out on is having that that platform of being in a band or something before they come out. Mm-hmm. Because then you know the struggle. But when you just get handed something, mm-hmm. that's what makes you not appreciate what you have.
Right.
And then you abuse, you know, what you have and start acting retarded out on the road, doing stupid stuff that don't make sense. And then you end up drugging out or doing whatever. Next thing you know, you dead. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, and, you know, that's pushing it a little far. But I'm just saying, when you're handed something, you're not going to appreciate it like you appreciate it when you work hard for it. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not against auto-tuning or any of that. I don't need it, you know, thank God. I'm not going to say I wouldn't let nobody put it on my vocals for a certain type of sound or whatever. Put it on now. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, at the end of the day, I know if I have to do it live, I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how I see it.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Kat, this is sort of a twofold situation, because just like I just told Jay with the EDM and how it does get on my nerves, and I'm over 40, so it irks me. What also irks me, I started off in the industry as a singer. What also irks me are singers who think that they have to riff themselves to death.
Oh, God, that drives me nuts, too. Oh.
You know, it's to hear, I mean, like a natural voice, it's so difficult to come across these days. But then I think to myself, well, maybe this is the new thing. Maybe everybody's into, you know, the twisting of the neck and the eyes rolling back and the, you know, the chicken, you know, moves or whatever else. Maybe that's the thing. But I can't get into that.
No, you're right. I agree with you a lot on that, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of them riff too much.
Yeah.
Because then you can't hear the quality of the voice. And then I really believe a lot of them sound the same.
Yes, yes, yes.
You don't have, that's the thing. Now, that's the one thing I think that's missing today. Mm-hmm. It's only a few that have distinctive sound. Mm-hmm. And that's only because, like you said, they be riffing and everybody doing the same thing.
Right.
Everybody want to sound like a Kim Burrell, and everybody want to sound like, you know, whoever else they can gravitate towards, mm-hmm. instead of being them. You right. know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I was a big, huge Phyllis Hyman fan, mm-hmm. and because my mother played Phyllis Hyman all the time. Mm-hmm. So for me, I love the tone of Phyllis' voice, mm-hmm. and I love the tone of, you know, a lot of singers. I was a band, you know, I like bands. So I like SOS Band and the, you know, and Midnight Starlight, like all of those, mm-hmm. and the Commodores and everybody else. So, yeah, I'm kind of telling my age, too. Not mm-hmm. even though I was little when I was listening to them, but I'm just saying.
Right, right.
those voices I love, mm-hmm. New Birth, and, you know, all. I love those voices.
And so, I'm really concerned, not to interrupt you, but I'm really concerned today that the kids today who are hearing the music will not have that quality of music 20 years from now.
They won't.
You know,
won't have any classic. It won't be any classics.
Right.
Because of the way it's going. You're right. It's mm-hmm. not going to be any classics. It's just going to be the next joint to come out.
And I don't really think that's an age thing, because I remember, personally, I think the best music was the 70s. And I was very young then, so I couldn't understand what it meant. But a lot of the music that came out in the early 70s, Delphonics, the Stylistics, the, like you said, New Birth, Even James Brown. It's like a lot of stuff that came out then was, in my opinion, very good, but and timeless. But I was just thinking that the other day. I said, wow, when I listen to the radio now, which is rare, and I come from radio, but I said, when I listen to radio now, I don't hear like a song that 20 years from now somebody could play, you know, and it would generate, you know, emotions or whatever else. It might get people on the dance floor. But, right. You know, yeah, there's a difference. But it's the same irony that we're talking about. I was talking about with Jay with EDM. It's like you're saying all the singers sound the same. I'm saying that EDM, the music sounds the same.
Right.
So, Jay, I want to ask you something about, go back to the black DJs again. Why is it that EDM, the EDM guys are stars and the urban DJs who do the mixes are not big stars like that?
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Ooh, that's a serious question. okay. Well, it comes down to a few things, all right? First of all, let's take it from the perspective, of the business side, mm-hmm. Okay? The business side meaning like the record labels, the publishers, the producers, you know, things, people like that, remixes. The things about, we're told on a regular basis, and I get this too as a producer as well. We get told on a regular basis, we need it to sound like this, we need it to sound like that, okay? And everybody's in the game, whether it's EDM or whether it's R&B or hip hop, whatever it may be, mm-hmm. We're all trying to appease the people who are paying or who are going to be putting money in their pocket, in this case, like the label, for example. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to appease them, and because they're going to be the ones marketing it and doing everything. And, you know, we want to appease them because we feel that if the crowd is reacting to that, that's what we're going to give them, you know. Now, I'm not saying everybody's like that, but that's what it ultimately comes down to. Everybody wants to get paid, mm-hmm. Okay, and we're told what we need to do. Now, from an EDM perspective, they have been doing that for many, many years and dominating that industry and keeping it pretty much like a close knit amongst themselves, mm-hmm. All right? You know, there's a lot of EDM DJs out there. I mean, a lot. I mean, there's hundreds, for example. But you only hear about a select few of them because those are the ones who have been in the business for many, many years. They paid some dues, like Jackie said, you know, as singers would do and artists and stuff like that. But at the same time, they're trying to have a really like a big lock and a foothold on what it is. Because to be honest with you, it's a whole lot of money. I mean, I've seen some of the things and that they do. The simple thing that they do for the money that they receive. And I'm like, this is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's really, really phenomenal. And it's not to say that black DJs can't do it. Mm-hmm. They really can. The opportunities are there. They've always been there. But it's kind of like, hey, look, if you don't come to us and present us with something that we want to hear or make us feel comfortable working with you and make us know that you are reliable as the DJ or producer or whatever you are, then, hey, ain't like we didn't try to help you out. We've always been here. You just decided to take a back seat to it. Mm. But now what's happening is a lot of black DJs, they're looking at like, wow, look at all the money. Look at all the fame. Look at the shows. Look at this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, well, they're kind of like waking up to saying, well, how can I get in?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, and
the door's closed.
Well, here's the thing: it's not closed. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Slam shut.
I would say it's ajar. Okay.
Okay.
But it's not shut. It's not totally shut when the door's locked and you can't, and they threw away the key. No, okay. It's not totally like that.
All right.
But what black DJs need to do, if they really want to get in the door and really express themselves,
mm-hmm.
showing them what they can do and really capture that audience that's looking for us, because they really are. Mm-hmm. Create some music. Create some music and release it. Because if you don't do that, then you're no better off than sitting there sleeping all day long and wishing, wanting, and hoping, you know?
It really would be great if we could figure out a way to patent our culture and our music, because it seems that we do create the music, but then we also, everybody else kind of takes it.
Well, look, you're right, and I'm going to spin off in that just like this. Take a look at a lot of these. Okay, perfect example. Why does David Guetta, okay, why does he hire Nicki Minaj or several other types of urban artists to sing or be an artist on their records? Why? Because it's not that the door is closed, but we have a sound. Mm-hmm. We have a character and we have a sound, and no one can take that away from us. They want that sound. Mm-hmm. The dance floor likes that sound. People who are into music, when they hear what we do, they love it. It's always been that way.
Right.
The politics behind it is a whole other story.
Yeah.
Okay. But let's be real with it. We cannot be denied. But, you know, again, it's like, to patent our sound, I guess we can do it, but we'd have to all do it together.
Yeah, well, forget that. All right, yeah. So, Jackie. Jackie?
I'm here.
Okay, you're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station. What are you working on? What's coming up with I know you said you're doing some A&R work, and you're working with Jay. Are you going to be doing some more work with Jay? Are you going to be doing some solo projects? Are you going to record Make It Last Forever on your own? I mean, what are you going to do?
You know what? That's funny. You are funny. Yeah, I need to do it over, right? By myself.
Yeah, no. Well, I want you and Keith to still do some Vegas shows together, so I don't want to get y'all mad at each other, but...
You're funny. I talked to Keith about a week and a half ago, and I called him and said, you know what? I said, Babyface and Tony did a duet album that won a Grammy, and I love that album, and I was so happy that they won. It was like I did the record with them. And I told him, I said, you know, we should do another duet. Mm-hmm. I think about it, baby. I'm not begging him to do another duet. That was one of those. Let me call him and see.
Right.
But you know, let him rock out, because Keith is older than me. Mm-hmm. He's like 10 years older than me. So he can rock out with what he's doing. That's wonderful. Do you. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, I used to sing with Toto too. Mm-hmm. The rock group Toto, and I was a huge fan of Toto.
Right.
So I got my rock little, you know, taste when I was out with them. And I did their tours off and on for 2 years until my stuff got too much in the way. Mm. But the one thing I learned from Toto when I worked with Toto, and Toto still tours today, and they had band members that are deceased now and everything, but they still work and they still sell
the deceased members do?
Well, what'd you say?
The deceased members still work?
No, look, they probably work too. Wherever they are, I hope they still working, because when I leave, I hope I'm working when I leave too.
Well, as long as they're not on the road.
Working, you know, to this day, the ones that are alive, they're still working to this day. And the one thing that I learned from them when I was working with them before my record dropped, they said, make sure, whatever you do, Jackie, you take care of your band. Take care of your people. They were like, you know, when they got paid, they made sure that their people got paid first. And they took the leftovers. Then I did an album with the Family Stand.
Oh, yeah.
And I did an album called Connected with the Family Stand. Mm-hmm. And,
get
you know,
ahead.
That was going That was going well for a minute. I didn't do Ghetto Heaven.
Okay, I remember the group. Yeah, Ghetto Heaven. I remember.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They did great Ghetto Heaven. Yeah, and Sandra St. Victor did that song. And you know, she was the original singer anyway. But I came in, and she had left the group and went solo. And I came in and did an album with them. You know, we worked it out with Sylvia Rhone. She wanted me to do it, so I ended up doing it with them.
Who's Sylvia Rhone?
Yeah.
Who's
you
that?
Don't know. She was the president of.
Who's
so wrong? You know what? I'm gonna fight y'all because everybody know who Sylvia Clinton is. But really, I love Sylvia. She's a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. And been in the business forever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I did the thing, you know, with the family stand, and we did a live record, and that record was kind of on the rock. Mm-hmm. It's like an R&B rock album. Okay. So now I'm pushing to do some more of my rock stuff. But I'll tell you this first. Me and Salt, and I call him Salt. Jay Salter has a nickname, everybody, and it is Salt. That's what I...
That's
so,
right.
Yes, Salt and I are going to do some more stuff. We don't know what we're going to do yet. With me working with him, he gave me life back for my singing. You know, I didn't even think, because I was scared. I didn't want to record anymore. I got fearful of the industry because mm-hmm. I left the industry. They didn't not want me. Mm-hmm. They didn't say, oh, you know what? We're not doing no more Jackie McGee records and none of that. I left. With me working with Salt, when I went in the studio with Salt, it gave me so much of my life back.
Good. You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
So you're not even affiliated with a label, are you?
Bro, I did my own label. I said, I can't wait for these guys no more. It is 2015. You know, I'm tired. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would always entertain a deal that makes sense.
Right.
All right. I would never turn that down. Mm-hmm. Okay. However, I can't sit. I'm not the type of person where I'm going to sit here and just watch time go by and watch my life say, you know, hey, you know, I have this talent. I have these abilities. You know, I know people or whatever. And just like Jackie, we're not going to sit here and just do nothing. We're too talented and too creative and too hungry to do this.
Right.
And we love it. That's the thing. We absolutely love it. And we can capitalize it in the right way. So,
isn't that amazing how once you get over 40 that you realize more than ever that time is more valuable than everything else?
I'm telling you.
You know, when you're younger, you think it's money. You think it's so many other things, but it's really time. And you need to set goals and have, you know, give this a year, give that 6 months. Because when you get older, you realize I don't have that time. So, you know, I need to get stuff done right now.
Jackie McGee, okay, she's a fantastic dynamic woman, okay? Mm-hmm. As a person, she's a blessing in my life. It's an honor for me to know her, work with her, be friends with her. She's been fantastic. Of course, I've been a fan of hers for many years, but besides that, she is just a wonderful, wonderful woman. You know, as it's growing, you know, mm-hmm. we're getting picked up in, you know, more and more radio stations around the world with her on it, with her input. Or her feature, rather, mm-hmm. Per day, which is fantastic. And I just want to say, you know, Jackie, thank you. You know, thank you for being my friend. And thank you for just you being who you are.
You know, I paid him. I paid him, Kevin. All that. I told him I give you $100 and I got to pay payments on $100.
You're listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.